Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Sci-Fi Dig. I'm your host, Aaron Makem. Today, I'm going to talk about the movie The Hidden. Now, I had no idea that this movie was a science fiction movie. As I mentioned before, as we put together the list for the podcast, there were several movies on there that, I knew the titles, and I, had maybe seen a cover from a VHS or something here and there, but I had no idea that this was a science fiction movie. So I was kind of going through the list and trying to pick out some stuff that I'd seen, some stuff that I hadn't seen, in order to shake things up a little bit, and I picked out this. This movie is from 1987. It grossed just under $10 million. And I have to say that I rather enjoyed the film. More like a cop procedural that had a science fiction element to it. And when the film starts off, it doesn't mess around. There's not a lot of buildup. We jump right into the action, and then from there, we dissect what exactly happened. We start off with a bank robbery, where a man comes to the bank, and he doesn't just come in and like rob the bank. He just starts shooting people, and then very calmly walks out to his car, gets into his car, puts a cassette tape in, and then takes off. And we have some great chase scenes all over the city. Finally, he is stopped. And he is stopped by, like, I don't know, six or seven cop cars and a whole bunch of police. And he's actually going to ram that barricade. But he keeps on going. And they manage to shoot him, and he crashes. And he comes out, and he gets shot a bunch. And, his body is taking a lot of abuse. And so we have our main character here, our main badass cop, Tom Beck. And he's played by Michael Norrie, who's been a lot of, I'm sure I'm probably saying his name wrong. I'm horrible with actors' names. I can say that right now. If it's not straightforward, I'm horrible with it. But he plays the hard-nosed cop. He plays in a lot of different things. But he is just somebody who is kind of overworked and has a lot going on. He has a wife and a daughter. And he just comes across as somebody who wants to know what's going on, wants to kind of be in control. And we get introduced to our second character, our second main character, Lloyd Gallagher, played by Kyle MacLachlan, he's just you obviously know there's something a little odd about him, and I didn't even read a synopsis of this film when I started watching it. It was on a list, people said it was science fiction, so I just got it and started watching it, rented it from Netflix and started watching it, and I knew right away that the Kyle MacLachlan character had to be like an alien or something like that, because he was just different. And so he comes in and he introduced himself to the chief of police and says that he needs their help.
Confiscated $3,000.
Beck, this is Agent Lloyd Gallagher, FBI Seattle. You'll be working with him the next few days.
I'm in the middle of a case here. I haven't finished my shooting report. What am I supposed to do? Drop this? Doesn't anybody say please anymore?
Please.
How can I refuse?
You can't.
5-2.
Yes, day one. Bureau's getting them younger every day now.
Yeah, I must get them right out of high school.
Any unit in the vicinity of the playground?
No, don't put it on my desk. Come on, man. Beck, do not put that on my desk. Do not put that on my desk. Beck, come on, give me a break. I haven't seen my wife in a month.
Believe me, she's fine. I was with her last night, and she said to say hello.
I sent you a big kiss.
You guys are very funny. Yeah.
You know, she's getting kind of fat.
No, no, yeah. 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 Yeah.
So who are we looking for, public enemy number one?
His name is Jack DeVries.
Jack DeVries?
Jack DeVries.
Stockbroker?
Right.
How long have you been after him?
About a month.
A month, huh? Why don't you go buy yourself a drink?
Why?
Because he's in the hospital and he's not going to make it through the night.
Which hospital?
St. Joseph's.
1st of May.
He ain't going anywhere. What's your hurry?
And, of course, Gallagher goes that he's trying to go to the hospital to find out what's going on with this guy. And we're still not quite sure. We just know that this guy robbed the bank. He's a bad dude, and he took a lot of abuse. Now, I have one more clip here. Just about, this is the reason I'm playing this, is to kind of show you like how awful this person is. There's no sympathy for him when you hear all the things that he's done.
Mr. DeVries' condition is deteriorating. We'll have to move him back to intensive care.
You think he'll make it, Doc?
Well, with all the trauma, it's a miracle he's still alive. I doubt he'll last the night.
Good. Keep us up to date, will you, Doc?
Detective Beck, no one deserves to die like that. I don't care what the man's done.
He killed 12 people, wounded 23 more, stole 6 cars, most of them Ferraris, robbed 8 banks, 6 supermarkets, 4 jewelry stores, and a candy shop. 6 of the ones he killed, he carved up with a butcher knife. 2 of them were kids. He did all that in 2 weeks. If anybody deserves to go that way, it sure in the hell was him.
I just absolutely love that scene because the doctor is, you know, he's being a doctor and saying people, you know, just, you don't deserve to go out like that or whatever. And he's not like necessarily being cocky about it. He's just kind of saying matter-of-factly. And I just love that they rattle off all the things that this guy has done. And it shows you just what a bad, you know, a horrible person he is. And at this point, we still have no idea what the story is here, what's going on, why he is, why the guy's acting like this, why he's able to take all this abuse. And then as the film continues, we see that he's in the hospital. He wakes up. He takes all of the he has a somebody else in his room with him, who's also in on a gurney or on a bed and in bad shape. And there's no divide or anything. It's just two guys shoved in a room together, right? He takes all the gear out of his arm and you know, all the monitoring equipment off. And he goes over to this other guy. And he opens his mouth and this giant slug creature comes out. And it's kind of a slug with like 6 legs. And he comes out of his mouth and goes into the other guy. And that's when you realize that obviously it's some sort of alien parasite that latches onto human life and is, taking over these bodies. And for whatever reason, it doesn't really explain, you know, the idea here is that these aliens like fast cars and they like loud music. And if anybody gets in their way, there's not any kind of reasoning. There's just, I'm going to kill them and take them out kind of thing. The movie is very straightforward and I want to use the word driven because it's definitely like a bullet line from the beginning to the end. You know, we have some side stuff here and there, but even the minor character development we have doesn't derail the film. There's not like some kind of love story that's going to be half the movie about that. It's just about them catching this guy. And so the next scene, you know, we obviously, you know, the other thing I like too is that in this next scene we'll show that. Is that, you know, for a movie, you know, in the 80s, late 80s, you know, a lot of the times they would have these alien films and you know, we weren't all connected by computers like we are now and stuff like that. And people wanted paperwork and facts and all these things to make sense of when you have a science fiction film, you obviously have like a parasite that can look like anybody. A lot of times you get bogged down, either you get really bogged down in explaining it, trying to explain it to the higher ups. You know, and you'd have that revelation, you know, where like, oh, well, the captain now suddenly believes that, you know, this thing's an alien. He's not going to explain it, but they're going to take it out kind of thing. Or they just kind of, it's so unbelievable that anybody's going to go along with what's happening because they're breaking laws. It doesn't make any sense. There's nothing official. There's no bureaucratic red tape, you know, to follow all these things up. There's a lot of craziness going on and nobody seems to really follow those rules. Sometimes those story points can work depending on the film and who the star is and what exactly you're trying to make here. This movie, it's one of those movies where they're just telling a story. The entire film is story driven. We get little bits and pieces about the characters, but rather than a movie being character driven and, you know, there's a couple of films that have come to mind. Split Second, you know, was kind of a it was more of a character-driven film than a story-driven film. You had a simple story, but it was the drive of the character that really told it. It is the exact opposite in this film. It is definitely about the story. And I was, like I said, it starts off with a bang. It starts off, you know, with this bank robbery, and you jump on board, and you're along for the ride, and you don't really stop and think about all those little details until later on in the film. This next clip explains why the police wouldn't have a record of this guy. Because, I mean, these people that are doing these things, they have no criminal record. They have no criminal background. They've never done anything wrong. And suddenly, they go from, you know, 0 to 60, you know. He goes from, you know, just living his life to suddenly just shooting up banks and driving cars and stealing cars and murdering people with butcher knives and everything else.
If you want my help, you better think about telling me what's going on.
Tracking down a criminal, he's come to your city. You've been assigned to help me find him. It's that simple.
If it's that simple, why is the Bureau sending you down here?
You don't have anything on Miller because he's always changing his identity. The same with DeVries. You didn't have anything on him until a couple of weeks ago because that's when you finally caught up with him as DeVries. Before that, he was Arvin J. Lusk in Portland, and before that, William Butler in Seattle. Miller does the same thing. This is the closest I've been. Got to be stopped here before he moves again. We'll take my car. Let's go.
And of course, his car is a Porsche. And that's when you know that he is also of the same type of alien or creature or whatever that is, you know, likes the fast cars or whatever. He's, you know, he's chasing this guy down. And although he hasn't come right out and said it, you know, you're starting to get the idea that he is here to track down this alien, and that obviously Kyle MacLachlan's character is not altogether human. He's very much like this alien creature, parasite thing. I'm just going to say alien from now on. You guys get the gist. And so they have like a tenuous relationship, you know, where there are, they both, you know, Kyle MacLachlan's whole drive is to stop this guy, and he's going to do anything. You know, he's been tracking it, obviously, and he wants to stop it, and he realizes they switch bodies. Then you have Gallagher, who is like, well, you know, I have a job to do. This is just another job on top of 8,000 other things I have to do, all these other crimes I have to try to solve, all these cases, all the paperwork, everything's piling up, and you're pulling me away from that to follow, you know, to come on to this one. And he's, you know, he's just got a lot going on, where Kyle MacLachlan's character is just, hey, you know, I only have one thing to do, and this is it, you know. So they have this conversation in the car, and we slowly learn a little bit more about what's going on here.
You know what bothers me about these two guys, DeVries and Miller?
Neither has a criminal record. They both led normal lives till a few days ago, and now they're killing people.
You read minds, or was that just a shot in the dark?
I read minds.
Oh, yeah? What was I just thinking?
That I'm full of shit.
Impressive.
Not really. Pretty simple to read.
I don't read minds, and I'd like to know if you're just doing your job or if there's something personal between you and these two clowns.
I guess you could say it's personal. You killed my partner.
Which one? Which one killed your partner?
Both.
I'm surprised the Bureau let you stay on the case. I hear they're not big on revenge.
What would you do?
As a cop?
As a man.
I lost a partner once. We'll get Miller.
Now, I realized earlier when I mentioned the names, I got the names mixed up. Gallagher is played by Kyle MacLachlan, and Beck is played by Michael Norrie. And Beck is a more fleshed out kind of character. He's, you know, he's got emotion, you know, he gets angry, you know, he's your typical kind of cop character, you know, a lot in his plate, doesn't really have time for this. Kyle MacLachlan is obviously, you know, he's playing an alien here. He doesn't show a lot of emotion. He's kind of a monotone voice. And I just love that exchange when he's like, you think I'm full of shit. And I thought it was good because it's not, he wasn't getting loud. He wasn't getting emotional. He's just stating the facts. And so rather than making him super robotic, we know that his mannerisms might be like that and his cadence might be like that, but obviously he's always got something going on. He understands people a little bit better than he lets on. And I thought the characters really played well off of one another. We have a scene where he goes to dinner at Beck's house, and it's kind of an awkward dinner. He talks about his wife and daughter both being deceased and how he's kind of, you know, you get the idea that he's kind of alone in the world, and he has a little bit of, he doesn't show jealousy or anything like that, but you can see that he appreciates what Beck has, and I don't want to say envious, but just kind of analyze the situation, and, you know, probably it comes across, he's kind of thinking to himself, man, this guy's really lucky and might not even know it because he has all this. You know, obviously, McLaughlin's character is kind of missing that in his life. Now, our alien is an older guy, and he's been injured, and he's bleeding pretty bad. He's got some injuries, and he's not in very good shape. He goes to a strip club, and this is where Claudia Christian comes in. I had no idea she was in this film. She plays a stripper. And he goes, and obviously the parasite moves from him to her. We don't get to see that scene. He just goes in there, and she's like, what do you want? And there's like that little scream thing they do, and they show the outside of the building kind of thing. And I was cool with that. We don't need to see the parasite transfer every time that it transfers. We don't need to see that because we've seen it once. We understand how it works. You know, beyond that, just kind of slows the film down. The pacing of this movie was so well done, I felt. And like I said, I popped it in. I started watching it. Next thing I know, the movie was over. When I went to pull the audio for the audio files, I found myself getting caught up in it and watching it all over again. And this might not sound like a compliment, but in this particular case, it is. A lot of times there's so much minutia and so many things going on in the background that you spend a lot of time like looking around trying to pick up all the little details that you missed the first time around. But this, it's definitely driven by the story and the action of what's happening. And there's not a lot of that going on. Or there might be some stuff in the background that I didn't really care about. I want to see the characters. I want to see, you know, what's going on and what's happening. Now, two characters are playing very well off of one another. They track Claudia Christian's character to an abandoned building. I think it's abandoned. I don't know. It's a building. Okay. And they have this discussion about who's going to cover who, what's going to go on here. And the whole scene just kind of made me laugh because obviously Kyle MacLachlan's character is used to working alone and doing this alone and not having a partner. And it was just, I don't know. I just felt that this really, you know, for the little bit of character development we had, things like this happen, and we're not really getting into the backstory and things like that, but you're just seeing how they're working together, and I just thought it worked so well.
I'm going in. I'll cover you.
I'd be safer if you didn't.
Fine, I won't cover you.
All right, cover me.
You want me to fucking cover you or not?
I need you to cover me.
Fine, I'll cover you.
Jesus Christ.
That whole scene just kind of made me laugh because I could so see myself being back where it's just like, dude, I'll do what you want me to do, but you need to make up your mind. I said cover, you said no, then you said yes, and it's just like, holy cow. The whole scene was just kind of funny because you could just absolute disgust on his face. It's like, Jesus, this is ridiculous. Anyway, so they go up on the building. Beck gets thrown over to the side. He's hanging on. Gallagher comes, you know, Beck makes himself, you know, is able to pull himself back up on the building. He gets shot in the shoulder. And we come down to the showdown between Claudia Christian's character as the alien and Gallagher. And he pulls out this little funky looking weapon and he's getting ready to shoot her. And she's like, you know, I'll never be killed or something along those lines. Basically, like, yeah, this isn't, you know, I'm going to win. There's no way you're going to win or whatever. And she jumps off the building. Well, as soon as she jumps off the building, Gallagher realizes something's up. Now Beck has seen this whole exchange. He knows something else is going on here. And he's getting kind of ticked off because he's not been let in on what's happening. Gallagher goes down to the street level. And by that time, one of the chief or somebody higher up and his dog have arrived on the scene. The dog approaches the body, and it's pretty clear that the alien has jumped to the dog's body. And so there's nothing, you know. And so Beck is getting annoyed because he knows something's going on, and the Gallagher's not giving him the whole truth, you know. And, you know, this is kind of what I like, that there's not like a lot of BS going on here, that, you know, rather than spending a half an hour trying to convince this character, you know, trying to convince Beck that, yeah, you know, aliens exist and they're here and yada, yada, yada. It's they kind of streamlined the process and I really like it. But something you didn't think you'd see happening, because, you know, in any other movie, you'd be like, okay, well, now, you know, we're going to go outside the law and we're going to do, and which is fine, but it gets old after a while. Beck just kind of gets ticked off and arrests him.
It's not over, is it? No. I want an explanation.
Explanation won't help you.
I've worked homicide for 13 years, and I've seen a lot of strange shit. But I have never seen anything like this. Now, you seem to know what's going on, and I don't. And you're going to tell me.
Explanation's not going to help you.
I'll decide that.
And I'm sorry.
Hey! Don't you walk away from me.
Pack it in. What do you say?
What I'm after is still out there. And I don't know where to start.
Cliff!
Tommy, what happened to you, man?
Arrest them.
Arrest him.
Book him.
And I know as the time went on in the late 80s, early 90s, I mean, Kyle MacLachlan really made a name for himself doing Twin Peaks. And then when he was in the Dune movie, that was also, whether you love the movie or not, the point is it was a big thing for a lot of science fiction fans that movie had come out. And whether it was, you know, it was clearly not a true adaptation of the book. I mean, you know, anyway, that's a whole different topic. The point is that it seems to me that he's always kind of gotten a bad rap of his acting ability. And, you know, people have made comments that, you know, he's kind of wooden and this and that, you know. I've enjoyed everything he's been in. I mean, I think he's a world-class actor? No, but I also think he's probably the absolute perfect candidate for that Twin Peaks role, because, man, that was just fantastic. I just absolutely loved him in there. I thought he pulled that off. And even in Dune, I thought he did a fantastic job. I thought he did a really good job in this movie, considering the material that he had to work with. He's kind of constrained. He couldn't just be a regular guy. And I love the end of that scene before he arrests him, where he's just like, whatever I'm looking for, you know, what I'm looking for, I don't know where to start, you know. And we get this whole idea of him being a loner and the fact that, okay, I'm done with you now because you can't help me anymore. So now I'm moving on. You know, it's as simple as that. You know, basically, he just kind of using this guy for information. He never really needed help. You know, he just kind of had to go through the proper channels in order to get to the people he needed to get to. And I just like the fact that he's like, okay, well, you know, basically we're done here because the aliens got in the way and I don't need you anymore. And so goodbye, you know. And I like the fact that, the Beck just gets really irritated and has him arrested. In the meantime, you know, Beck goes back to the station and it's real late. And he gets this little bit of information about Gallagher.
I got that information you wanted. Okay. Seattle FBI says Agent Lloyd Gallagher was killed in a forest fire about a month ago with a friend of his named Stone, Robert Stone. They were hunting in Olympic National Forest the weekend they had that big forest fire. Dero figured Stone was dead. Never found his body, just figured it burned up in the fire.
Is that all?
Had him wire me a picture of Stone. Evidently, Mr. Stone has taken over the identity of his dead friend.
Now, Beck goes and has one of the other officers bring Gallagher up, and he needs to have a conversation because he needs to know what's going on. And that's kind of like the drive behind him. I mean, he's trying to make sense of everything. It's, you know, you see this in a lot of the procedural cop type things. And that's what I liked about one of the things I liked about this movie. It's kind of a straightforward procedural film that, you know, it, you could take out the science fiction element and it would still work. You know, it's not completely out of the ordinary. It's not set in the future. It's not, there's nothing really, there's no kind of crazy weapons. We have the one weapon, but we only see it a couple times. It's very well put together. You know, like they made this, had the science fiction element, but just made it so that pretty much anybody could sit down and enjoy this film. I think if you don't, I'm not a fan of science fiction, you'd still like the idea of trying to track down a killer, the mystery involved and all of that. So he brings him up and he has this conversation with him to try to figure out exactly what's going on. And this is where Gallagher kind of gives him probably more information than what he wants. But at the same point in time, he just kind of lays it all out there.
Crazy thing. I was starting to like you. Sit down. Checked with the FBI in Seattle. Lloyd Gallagher is dead. Your real name is Robert Stone. That's about all we know about you, except for the fact that you're driving a stolen Porsche, which is probably about the only true thing that you've told us so far. So why don't we just have a little talk? Why don't you tell me who you are and what you're doing here?
Please don't ask me that.
Give me that. I have had it with you. What do you think this is? Some kind of a game? You think you can waltz into this town, turn my department upside down, endanger the lives of my men? I am tired of you jerking me around. I want answers. I want to know why it takes 15 shots to take down some zoned-out stripper. I want to know why three law-abiding citizens all of a sudden go crazy and start killing people. I want answers, and I want them now.
Miller, Stripper, DeVries were the same. And it's not human.
Excuse me?
I've been after it for a long time. Now it's here. On Earth, in your city.
Oh, boy. Are we talking spacemen here?
The way it works is it finds a body, gets inside, uses it to move around. Stays in that body until the body is so damaged it has to find another body. That's the only time I can kill it, when it's between bodies. I missed my chance when it came out of the stripper. It found another body and changed before I got there.
So now we don't know who the spaceman is?
No. But I don't have to look for it anymore. It knows I'm here. It'll come after me. Beck, I need my weapon. That's the only thing that can kill it.
So the spaceman is the one that killed your partner, your wife. The one that you've been tracking for the past...
9 years.
9 years.
Your time.
Our time.
I guess a career in the police didn't really prepare you for this, did it?
Yes, it did.
And with that, he locks him up. So the way things kind of evolve here is that the dog attacks the cop and transfers the alien into the cop. The cop comes into the station realizing that, you know, obviously Gallagher's there, and he comes to kill him because they are enemies. And so Beck comes down and brings the little weapon. This weapon's tiny, okay? It's a very tiny little silver weapon with like two points on it. I mean, it's like the size of a hockey puck. And, you know, basically realizes that what's going on is real, because this guy is going through and shooting up the police station, and he knows this guy, you know, so he knows that something's up, that what Gallagher has been telling him is true, that this alien gets in these bodies and takes control, and it's, you know, violent and et cetera, et cetera. And we get to a point where, you know, finally Beck says, why don't you shoot him with the weapon? And he turns around and shoots Beck, showing him that the weapon has absolutely no effect on humans. The alien has to be outside of the body in order for it to do any good. So we have this exchange that before this cop decides, because he has him cornered basically in the area of cells. And this is the first time we really hear him say anything about, you know, himself, or, you know, the fact that he's an alien or anything like that.
Al Hogg!
Yes?
Before I kill you, I'm curious. How did you find me?
You left an angry partner for dead on Altair.
A mistake.
That's what it said.
Die, you fucker! Son of a bitch!
Why'd you use that goddamn thing? Yet. You said it was the only thing that could kill him. What are you waiting for?
It's not that simple.
Alhark, how do you like being human?
It's all right.
Better than being Altarian. Altarians are a filthy people. We could take over this place if we wanted. They have nothing here to stop us.
Yo, hippie! What kind of dude are you?
Bye.
And with that, he shoots a large weapon and blows up half the jail. The one guy that you hear yelling is Danny Trejo, you know, playing a convict, you know, behind bars, which is kind of funny. Now, what ends up happening here is that the slightly bigger story that's mentioned at the beginning of the film and is now playing out at the end is that there is a senator coming to town going to announce his candidacy for president. And so this the alien cop goes, he goes there and at the hotel where they're going to be and is able to corner him and take him over. In the process, Beck gets shot and he's in really bad shape. And Gallagher's very upset that he got shot. We had this very small emotional scene when he sees he's shot and he's like, you know, oh, crap. And he kind of stays with him and he realizes that. You know, he realizes who the alien is in, and alien, you know, kind of gives him a look and lets him know that, you know, he's kind of got the upper hand. So Beck ends up going to the hospital where he's, like I said, he's in bad shape. I believe he's in a coma, and we see this scene with his wife and his daughter, and they're obviously upset about what's happening here. In the meantime, Gallagher goes into the goes to where the president or the senator is going to announce his presidency and going to give a speech. He's carrying a very large bag with him. He gets almost the whole way in and the cops start opening fire on him and he's taking a lot of damage, but he's able to open the bag. And I'm thinking, we're going to get to see a really cool alien weapon. That's not it at all. He has a flamethrower. So he just basically flames down the senator. And he's on fire, and he falls to the stage, and the alien comes out. And when he does, he shoots it with his little weapon, his little gun, and destroys it. And that's kind of the end of that. Now, we don't get to see the fallout from all of that, but what we do get to see is a scene where he's in the hospital, and Kyle MacLachlan, you know, he's in the hospital, and he goes and he wants to see Beck, and sees he's in really bad shape and that he's not going to make it. So he transfers his essence into Beck's body. Now, what's different, and I thought it would have been better if the aliens were the same, and the idea that they are both like this slug-like thing with six legs or whatever, and just knowing that they all look the same, but they make different choices just like human beings. But what he has is kind of like a bright light. He opens his mouth and this beam of light comes out and that's transferring his consciousness or whatever, his body, whatever he's transferring to Beck. And I'm not sure why, because it seems as though they are both the same, but for whatever reason, they did this obviously to show the good and the bad. You know, I felt that's my only critique, really, of, you know, I felt that that could have been done better because it'd been much better if it was the same kind of thing, I think. But that's just, you know, my opinion. I understand they're trying to make this clean. The effect was probably a lot cheaper to do like this. And Beck wakes up and his wife and daughter are there and, you know, he's obviously better. And that's kind of how the film ends. You know, it's not, there's not a lot of, hey, you know, I'm going to act like this now or whatever. It just ends on a high note. Overall, man, I enjoyed this film. Like I said, I mean, it was kind of straightforward and The pacing was very well done, and it just kind of flew by when I watched it. I'm super happy that I came across this. I'm glad that somebody added this to the list, because I had not seen it, and I'm really it really kind of made a mark on me of, like, you know, this is a film that didn't, that obviously didn't have a huge budget, but very well put together. I mean, I think that, you know, the thing that really gets it going is that it's just in the very beginning, there's not any build up, there's not any backstory, there's just this guy robbing a bank, and you're like, what the heck is going on? You can obviously see he's taking a lot of damage, but you're not sure what the heck's happening. And then from there, it just kind of takes off. Now, if I had known that this movie was a science fiction film, I'd be like, what the heck is going on? How can they shoot this guy so many times, and what's happening? But since obviously it was on the science fiction movie list, I knew they had to have a science fiction aspect to it. And right away, I assumed it was going to be some kind of alien or something. But I could see how you could be watching this without having any idea what it was and being like, what the heck? And then just getting caught up in what was happening and just been along for the ride. Now, I did not know until I started researching the film that apparently there is a sequel to this, The Hidden Two. It came out in 93, and it says that, I'm not exactly sure, we don't have a lot of the same characters in here, but from the reviews that I'm reading, apparently the first 15 minutes of The Hidden Two is the last 15 minutes of The Hidden, which I think is kind of a cheat, considering The Hidden Two is only like 90 minutes long, and it gets a horrible rating on IMDb. I like to use IMDb as you know, when I'm looking at films and seeing what people are thinking, because I know a lot of people like Rotten Tomatoes, but I don't really do Rotten Tomatoes because everything's overly critical. You know, when I'm watching a film, I'm not looking to find out if it's going to be a life-changing event or if everything is perfectly put together. I know filmmaking is an art form, but for me, it's entertainment. And if the movie's entertaining, then it's going to get high marks from me. If the movie's not entertaining, then it's not. And a lot of that's a personal preference. And I tend to agree with the IMDb ratings more than anything else. And so, you know, I haven't seen The Hidden Two, and I don't think I'm going to, because it gets like a 2.7 or something like that. And I'm not going to, and I'm not going to watch a movie that has like, that, you know, one third of the movie is the last movie being replayed, because that's not really, that's kind of a cheat, right? Maybe some point in time it'll be on TV or something and I'll check it out. But I really like the chemistry between the two main characters here. And I would like to, I mean, if that, to me, that is something that when you're watching it, you're not thinking it's going to play out, but it worked really well, because you have the one emotional guy who's still really smart. And then you have the guy who's more of a very methodical and not, doesn't get too worked up about anything. Now, if I had to rate this movie, and everything's a 5-star rating, like the previous Netflix rating, because Netflix has changed their rating, which I hate, it's just thumbs up or thumbs down. I'm not really, I like degrees to a certain extent. I'd give this movie probably 4 stars, because I'd watch it again. I'd watch this film again. And that's how I, you know, 3 stars, I liked it. 4 stars, I liked it, and I would watch it again. And this is a very, I think if you have time to kill and you don't want anything that's super heavy, but you want a science fiction film, you don't want anything that has, I mean, obviously there's sequels, but clearly it's not a real tight tie. It seems anymore that, you know, I have the same complaint about books. It's like you write a good book or you write a good movie and suddenly it does well and you have to have a whole bunch of sequels to it. It's just like, well, can we just get a story? And that's one of the things I miss about the 80s and even the early 90s, is that you can write books and movies and not worry about doing sequels. You can just write one story rather than it feels as though, I mean, part of that's our completist attitude, you know, and my fellow geeks know what I'm talking about. Like, if you get a book, especially the books, man, it's bad. You get a book and you read it and you realize that there's another one. You got to read them all. You got to get the complete story, right? It didn't used to be that way. You could just find a book that was a science fiction themed or fantasy themed. There was only one book, one story, you read it and you move on. And this is, it seems to me, as time goes on, the list of films available out there that are kind of one-offs is getting smaller and smaller. And I really enjoy being able to have, you know, sit there and watch a couple movies and not have to worry about, you know, any kind of connective material. You know, I don't want a prequel, which I hate prequels. I don't want a sequel. I mean, I like sequels, but don't necessarily need one. I want to get the whole story in one, in that one film, and then we can move on. It seems not only do we get sequels to movies that aren't necessary, but a lot of times they leave these little open endings so you know a sequel's coming, so we're not sure of the final destination of the characters, which is something that if I like the characters, I kind of want to know. At the same point in time, we get movies that are one-offs that have a kind of an open ending, and people get all bent out of shape about it because they don't have any imagination left. I mean, I know as we get older, we tend to lose our imagination, but I'm trying to hang on to mine as long as I can because I love this sort of thing. So that was The Hidden from 1987, and I give it 4 stars. I'm trying to do a better job of commenting on the name of the film when I'm doing it, although I put it in the show notes. But I hate when I'm listening to a podcast and they're talking about something and they don't say the name of the film again. I kind of try to remember where it's at. I tend to listen to podcasts a lot when I'm running and I don't have time to rewind. So it's rewind. Do we still say rewind or do we say skip back? I don't know. There's not any winding going on because it's digital. I don't know. Anyway, before I leave you, I wanted to do a top 5 list. I've tried to make several top 5 lists and I wanted to do a current one when I'm current. This is my top 5 comics that are current, like current comics, not of all time, not something I just recently read of a whole bunch, but these are all fairly current on a newsstand now. You can find them. And it just so happens that they are all DC comics. And I've been reading quite a bit of those, but I haven't actually read a comic in probably 2 weeks. I'm starting to get the shakes from not being able to do it. I haven't had a lot of time. And work has been so busy. I need to I can throw on a movie and then go back and because I'm gonna, especially if it's for the podcast, I can always go back and watch anything I missed. I'm going to catch when I pull the audio from it. But with comics, I like to have a little bit of quiet time, 15 or 20 minutes of quiet time in order to read 1 or 2 books before I can't just like do it and then just jump into something else. I like to have my full focus on the book when I'm doing it. Anyway, these are my top 5. That I'm currently reading that I think are just out of this world. I think everybody should check out. Now, the first one's kind of a cheat because the number one that I would recommend to everybody, I'm going to do these backwards. There's not any real particular order to these, but this is easily my top one, and that's Superman and Action Comics. Both those titles that are crossing back and forth and have the same character has been out of this world. The whole relationship between Superman and his son has been absolutely amazing. I just really love it. We have the Superman back that's full of hope and who's smart and doesn't deal with all the problems by using brute strength. It's been a fantastic book. The writing has been top-notch. The art has been top-notch. And the story has been incredible. I love this book and is the one book that I cannot wait to read the next issue whenever I read it. Everything else I'm pretty patient about, but this one I get done with every time I finish a book. I'm like, man, I wish I could get the other one. And so since I'm kind of behind, I can hopefully there'll be like 2 that I can get and I can read them both back to back. Of course, then I'll be kind of complaining because I got to wait for the next one. Detective Comics has been very good. It is more than just Batman. It is a team and it has been coming along rather nicely. It's had some slow spots, but it's definitely, we get a lot of character development. And I'm enjoying what I'm reading there. Again, highly recommend, but nothing's going to beat Superman. Maybe it's a place I am in my life, but it's just so good. So well done. The Flash, is something that, Flash is my favorite character and I can't say I've read everything, but I've read a lot of Flash and, I'm really enjoying what they're doing here. We had a slow start. We had some bad art in the beginning. I did not love the art, and that's a very opinionated thing. I mean, somebody else might love the art, but I didn't love the art in the beginning, and I felt that the story was really decompressed. We could have lost 2 issues and to compress that information, but I'm really liking what's going on here. And again, one of the relationships here that's really working is between The Flash and Kid Flash, you know, both in and out of the costume. It's very, it's an interesting relationship, and the information that they're sharing is working really well. It's something that I think that DC has picked up where they left off with, you know, skipping over kind of the new 52 stuff. But at the same point in time, we're kind of incorporating that, but they've done it in a much better way. I really enjoyed the stories they're telling here. Like I said, I read this and I read some Marvel stuff, but the DC stuff has been coming out on top for me every time. It's like I don't have a whole lot of complaints. And there's a couple slow books, some books that start off really well and just kind of really have lost their momentum. But for the most part, I'm enjoying what I'm reading. Red Hood and the Outlaws. I've liked every incarnation of this book that we've had, both the New 52 and the more current one. And I just love the dialogue in these books is just amazing. It really carries the story forward. And even though this is definitely more of a character-driven type of story, then, you know, we have a story going on, but the characters are what brings everything to life, and their reaction to what's happening around them is really what I'm enjoying with this. Art, again, is okay. I mean, there's some that's fantastic, and sometimes it's hit or miss, and there's some story elements that are just okay sometimes, but the characters, the dialogue, it's going to make you laugh, and it's going to make you feel like you know these characters because they are... you know, that with the dialogue we're given, you kind of really get a feeling for who they are and what they're all about. Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps and Green Lantern kind of go hand in hand, and I'm really enjoying what's happening here. I've always been a fan of Green Lantern. I felt that the world is so big, sometimes it's so all-encompassing, it's very hard to get into. If you jump in and you're not sure about the background of these characters, what's going on, you know, I'm really enjoying what's, you know, we're kind of getting a reintroduction. They're taking it slow. And rather than, you know, setting everything on some world where there's 50 characters and you're supposed to know who all they are, you know, and what they're about and, you know, what their background is and how they interact with one another. You don't really get that. You're getting it a little bit at a time, and I'm really enjoying the fact that they're doing that because it's making me fall in love with these characters all over again. I really like the story, what's going on here. Again, you have a lot of characters. In this case, you have moments where the characters are driving the story and you have to kind of know what they're all about, but you definitely have a great story here that's been going on and kind of sucks you in, and I can't wait to see how this is like you can tell when they're doing this is more of a long-term type of thing because things happen that, you know, it's been going on for some time now, but you know it's going to come. If you're not going to get rid of a character forever, if somebody goes somewhere or something happens, you know, we know we're going to see that character again. It might be 5 issues, it might be 20 issues, and I like that because when we do something so quick, it really doesn't have any kind of you don't spend time focusing on another aspect. And I like that they introduce something happens, and then we focus on their aspect for a while, then we might come back to this. And I really enjoy the storytelling. Like the storytelling in all these books, they're doing a really good job. And Green Arrow. Green Arrow was kind of hit or miss for me in the beginning, but now we're kind of getting the band back together. And we have all these characters, and we're getting kind of a different take on origin stories and of all the characters involved in the Green Arrow universe. We've kind of have a mashup of classic Green Arrow, the New 52 Green Arrow, and some of the TV show elements are all kind of coming together, and they're making this work. I wasn't sure that they were going to be able to. I wasn't sure that it was going to work for me, but what they've done really has worked out well. They're not just kind of throwing things together. They're giving you some explanation of what's happening, and you're seeing Ollie in the way that, you know, somebody who wants to stand up for justice and do the right thing and who makes mistakes and who says, yeah, you know what, I kind of screwed that up. But I'm trying the best that I can do. And it's really, you know, one of the things that I enjoyed about the book is there are people that there's a point in the book, minor spoiler, where the bad guys are trying to discredit Ollie. So they have somebody dress up as an archer and is shooting green arrows into people. Just, you know, people that are reporting on, like, they hit a reporter, some random people. And it's one of those things where we live in a social media age. This people get a hold of this and they're like, he's a bad guy. Nobody takes time to do any investigative reporting or anything. They just jump on it and run with it. And somebody gets hurt and he's very upset this person got hurt. because this person was trying to help them. Now, they're not best friends. They haven't known each other very long or anything like that. But he, it really comes through, I think, in the storytelling that he's kind of tore up about this, that this is – he ultimately says this is my fault because I did something. These bad guys know who I am, and now this is what they're doing in retaliation. And this person who was trying to help me got caught in a crossfire, and that's just not really fair, you know, and he's kind of upset about it. But all these books are from DC. They're all currently on the comic racks, the trades are coming out. This all really good stuff. And one of the things that I've always tried to do on the Sci-Fi Dig podcast is really push for people to take a chance and read some comics. I know that we have, as science fiction fans, we have a lot of movies and television and books out there. But and I know superheroes aren't some people's thing, you know. But for me, comics have always been a part of my life. And we're getting a lot of television shows and movies taken from comics. I mean, obviously, some of them aren't mainstream, but give them a chance if you haven't. I can't say that enough. If you get the opportunity to pick these up, there's a lot of different services out there that have sales, both digital and physical. There's a lot of subscription-type services that you can check out some books and try them out for a month, and the fee is nominal. So, you know, you can do like Marvel Unlimited and pay the $10 a month or whatever and just try it for 1 month and just read as many books as they have. They have like 10,000 titles and see if you can find something you like. One final thing, and then I'm out of here. I know that tax time has just ended here in the U.S., and it's the beginning of, you know, summer's coming. Everybody's planning vacations and whatnot. But please don't forget that there are some institutions out there that do a lot of good for us, and one of those institutions is the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. I try to donate to them every year, even if it's only $10. You can also go there and buy some really cool T-shirts and also sign books and posters and everything else. And that money goes right, obviously you get something for your money, but you're also giving them a donation in the process. And if you're not sure what they're all about, go to their website and check it out. Subscribe to their newsletter. You usually get an email like once every week, something like that, talking about some of the things that are going on. I mean, I'm a huge proponent of free information and not banning books in schools. It's not up to the school to ban books. It's not up to the teacher to tell my kid what he or she can or cannot read. As parents, that's our job. There are things, in my life when my daughter grew up, she was reading well above her reading level. If there was any book she was interested in that we would have a discussion about whether or not we thought was appropriate. Certain things were, I think probably in her life, there's only been once or twice I was like, well, you can read this, but I don't think you're going to understand it. I've spent a lot of my time reading some of the same books she's reading, even though I want to kill myself during the process. But just doing it so that we can have common ground and I can know where she's coming from. I don't think any book should be banned. I don't think that anything that I don't think that if you're carrying manga across the border, you should be arrested and thrown in jail. There's a lot of things going on that, with the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, just a bunch of lawyers that they help people out. They help to try to fix situations, and not everything has to go to court. Sometimes just having them and just saying, hey, I got these guys on my side, it makes people calm down and have a conversation about why they're trying to ban something, and I know some people may or may not agree with that. I'm not saying that you should agree with it. I'm just saying that if you think back, Catcher in the Rye was banned. There were a lot of other books that were that the schools didn't want kids reading. I don't understand why. So that's just something to think about. Their money always goes to good use. They give you a breakdown. One of the few charities, I think, that give you a breakdown of where all the money goes, which is really cool. But it's just something that's kind of near and dear to my heart. I enjoy, reading their stories. I enjoy seeing, how they're fixing some of these problems. I don't enjoy seeing all these book burnings and banning and everything else. It's kind of ridiculous. But the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, I get nothing to say this or anything. It's just something that it's a good organization, and it does a lot for us fans out there. I mean, can you imagine not being able to read what you wanted to read when you were, in middle school, grade school, high school? I never had that problem. Growing up, we always had books, and I can only think of one instance where I was reading something that was clearly not appropriate for me, and my mother found out and said, yeah, you're not going to read this. And it really wasn't piece of crap novel anyway. But, you know, my thing is that that was her job. That's not somebody else's job who doesn't know me to say, oh, well, you know, we, God forbid, you should have, you know, a free idea. Anyway, done preach about that. I will talk to everybody next time. This is Aaron for the Sci-Fi Dig podcast. Over and out. Power to the...
Sun go down.